So tonight's guest is somebody that is indescribably special to me. He's indescribably special to an entire community of people. I love this guy like he was my own brother. He was one of the six men that carried my son's casket at his funeral. There aren't enough good things for me to say about PJ Broom. I'm glad you guys are all going to get to know him in this episode. Welcome to Burnham Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Burnham. Okay. Are we rolling?
Getting some audio tests.
All right, cool. Can you put that back in?
Yeah, that was a rough one, boy.
It was. Yeah. So we're rolling. Right? Isn't that what you just said?
Nice.
Yeah. You know what I like about you?
Say it again.
What I like about you, and I've been on your podcast.
Yeah, several times.
Three or four times. You're one of like the rare people that doesn't change when you know that it's like on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'd probably be worse at whatever I'm doing if I did.
Yeah.
So just stick with what works.
Yeah. You're just like unapologetically PJ all the time.
Yeah.
Whether the camera's rolling or
you like that about me? There's plenty of people that I think don't like that about me.
There may be people that don't, man, but like that's what I told you tonight.
They kick rocks.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But when I said, hey, you should be on my podcast, and you were like, I don't know what we're going to do. I was like, you just come on and be PJ.
I can do that.
And tell your, you know, you always got some wild story.
Yeah, some dumb stories. I think it's just I remember the details. And if I don't remember, I just make them up.
That's the best part. I think it's all the details.
I always tell people I'm like the old guy at the dump. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's what I'm training to be. You know, when I'm 70 or however old that guy is, he might be 304.
At least, yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's why they always hate me, all the old guys at the dump, is because they can feel that I'm going to take their job.
You're unseating them.
Yeah. They can feel it. I don't know if it's the double denim or what it is, but fact that I still say sir, that might be it.
Yeah.
That's kind of rare for someone, you know, as baby faced as me. But they can tell I'm going to, like, kick them out of the saddle, you know?
Well, I mean, if he's already 314, like, yeah, he's just like, not going to live forever.
Yeah.
Know? So by the time he lives another 45 years, mm-hmm. And you're 75 at that point.
I'm getting into my dump working prime.
Yeah.
About 70, right. I think. Yeah, judging by most of the guys that work there.
Yeah. It's been disappointing lately. Like, out at our dump in Shannon, the guys have been, like, 60. I'm like, what are you doing here, bro? Like, go get a job, you know?
I grew up in Subligna, and we lived, you know, there used to be a dump on Farmersville Road, and it's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Probably not enough people to dump into it, you know
probably,
what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know what, you know. It couldn't have been expensive. It had like a dumpster, you know, and they emptied it like every 3 weeks or something, it seemed like. But I would take our trash off on our four-wheeler because we lived like a half mile away.
Right.
And the guy that worked it was named, I'm not making this up, Cotton McGraw. Cotton McGraw, who ran the dump on Old Somerville and the intersection of Old Somerville and a Little Egypt. Yeah.
Little Egypt.
And if that isn't the most country thing, maybe even borderline white trash.
It's got to be.
Cotton McGraw. And he was a big-time coon hunter. Yeah, so anyways, he always, he was like my standard of a dump man. And he had to be. I don't know how, I mean, 80? You know, had to be 80.
Well, maybe perspective's a little different
when you were
12 or whatever.
Yeah, I lived there between the ages of 6 and 14.
He might have been 50.
Yeah, you know what? He might have. Nah, he wasn't 50. There's no way. And the only time I never saw him in a vehicle. He drove his four wheeler to work.
Mm-hmm.
And would go everywhere. Like, I saw him at a funeral once, and he drove his four wheeler there. Yeah. So Ted Touchstone's funeral. I don't know. He's a pretty.
A Cotton McGraw would drive a four wheeler to the funeral.
Drove
right?
His four wheeler was a Bayou, Kawasaki Bayou.
All
I'm
right.
Pretty sure that was a Kawasaki, right?
Remember? Yeah, I think so.
Anyways, he drove his Bayou to Ted's Touchstone's. It was a beautiful funeral.
Man, I'm sure it was.
A beautiful funeral. Yeah, spread his ashes up there. But anyways, yeah, so that's your starter story. There you go.
Yeah, I got one under our belt.
Yeah, so that's my standard of a dump guy. That's going to be me. That's like my dream job. Just stand out there and irritate the young kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, make them open their trash bags to make sure that there's not cardboard in it.
Dead animals or
yeah.
Car batteries.
You know what I mean? My wife loves to, God bless her, but she loves to stuff trash in the cardboard boxes. And then she's a beautiful young lady, and she can throw her cardboard wherever she wants when she goes. But, you know, I'm not that.
When you have to take it.
So then the guy gets a hold of me. He's like, hey, why you got trash in this box? You can't throw that box in here. So I have to dump out all the trash and then break down the box. And then it's been in the rain for 2 days because I forgot to go for 2 days. So it's in the back of my truck. And now it's like, you know, anyways, I don't know how we got on that. We're going to do a lot of this for the next hour.
Yeah, we'll chase all the rabbits. It'll be great.
Yeah.
But, like, Jessica would put this mic stand in a trash bag. You know, and all the little points are poking out through the bag.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she'd like fold it up and stuff it in there. Mm-hmm. So then they want to know, what's that? And I'm like, no, it's just my wife threw this in here. It's fine, I promise.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it's so aggravating.
Yeah.
God bless them, though. No, we need them.
We do.
Because, like, I'm sure, I'm sitting here griping about how she does her trash. I'm sure she's got a lot more important things that she can gripe at about me. You know, I'm working on them, sort of. Ones I want to. That's kind of how I am.
Yeah.
You know, I like to pretend like I like to work on things, on myself in particular. But really, it's just I like to work on the things that I like to work on.
Well, you got a little one that's just almost two.
She will be 16 months.
Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself.
In a few days, like a week or something.
Yeah, you and her are close in birthdays, right?
Yeah, so my birthday is November 8th. Kara's birthday is November 15th,
mm-hmm.
and Aurora's birthday is November 18th.
Oh, okay.
So three
nice and
birthdays
easy.
Within, yeah. So what it is I have a birthday, and then they have a birth month, and we celebrate from the 9th till, you know, Christmas, we're celebrating their birthday, it seems like.
That's kind of where I was going when I brought her up. You talked about working on things, and so some of that changes when you have a kid. Mm-hmm. Certainly when you have two or three of them, and then you just can't leave your socks in the sink anymore.
Yeah,
it's just not an option.
It's weird. Some of that happens, like, you don't even have to work on it.
Yeah.
It's like a light switch, like you were designed that way.
A wise guy with a red beard told you that some of that would happen.
Yeah, where it's just like, okay, like, you don't do that anymore, and it wasn't a conscious decision to be better about that. Like eating. Eating's a thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm really bad at remembering to eat. I'll eat.
It's not where I thought you were going with that.
Yeah, I'll go 3 days eating in a 1,000 calorie deficit, and then feel really poorly and be like, "Why do I feel awful?" And then be like, "Oh, it's because I haven't eaten. I've eaten a bag of chips every day for the past 3 days, and that's it." So, but you know, with her, can't do that. She stays with me all day. Mom goes to work at 6. So me and the baby hang out all day until mom gets off at 3, and you know, you can't forget to feed. I mean, but it wasn't something where I had to, I need to remember to feed. It's just like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Other things I do have to consciously, like, work on, you know, to do better by her, but, you know, the big things, you kind of just check those boxes.
Yeah,
you
know? It just becomes
I might necessity. Forget my meals, but I never forget hers type stuff.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's a lot of fun having a little one. It's hard.
Oh, man, you're crushing it, though.
Yeah, I feel like I'm doing well. I mean, I do my very best, and I know plenty of people that haven't done their very best, and those people turn out to be great people, too, you know what I mean, a lot of the time. Yeah. So if I just do my very best, and, oh, my gosh, I'm blessed with the best wife ever. I tell everybody that, and I think everybody tells everybody that, but, like, I genuinely mean it, you know what I mean?
Well, let's brag on Kara for a minute.
Dude, Kara's... top tier.
For you to do what you do for a living,
takes, like, some support.
It was gonna require, like, the perfect woman for you.
Yeah, it takes all kinds of support.
Yeah,
you know, and the right type of person to understand what I'm doing. You know, because, like, when we met, I was already training jiu-jitsu. Yeah. I was already wrestling. At the time, I thought I was gonna fight MMA. My body didn't really cooperate with that. MMA is hard.
It is.
You
it
know,
is.
It's hard mentally, and it's. I'm sure a lot of guys are struggling with injuries and stuff, but I was already having, like, some kind of serious injuries, and I had never even had my first fight.
Right.
And I think that was probably a big reason I never took the leap
and
did my first fights, because I was dealing with a shoulder dislocation, like, every practice, at least one. And, I probably dislocated my shoulder. You tell somebody that knows anything about shoulder dislocations, if you've dislocated your shoulder 50 times, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I Mine is so bad I can dislocate it right now and it'll pop
please
back
don't.
In.
Yeah, please I'm not going to do it.
But like it, I can, and it doesn't really even hurt. It's uncomfortable. You know, that's how serious mine got. I was punching people in their face and my arm was dislocating.
Yikes.
Yeah. So it was like, oh my gosh, like this is going to be hard to fight, you know? But then I kind of shifted towards the coaching. That was a big thing that pushed me into coaching, was I couldn't be selfish as much anymore.
So let's back up just for a second, because there's going to be people that listen to this that don't know who you are.
Yeah, that's fair.
You are a Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach.
Yep, that's what I do for a living. Yep, and yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, to think about, I own a gym right here on Broad Street. It's called Scramble Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Wrestling. You've had a lot of people that are intertwined with our community, which is cool. I like that. I like that we are able to synergy or whatever.
Well, I mean, nobody gets mad at Rogan for having a stream of comedians on his podcast, right? I bring on jiu-jitsu guys.
I love that, and it's beautiful. And it's just crazy how small of a world it is, you know?
Yeah.
But, so I do that. I coach half the adult classes, and I do all the kids' classes on a regular week. And so pray for me. That's all that means. But
what's the schedule like?
Busy.
Yeah.
For the gym, we go 7 days a week.
Right.
You know, we do a wrestling class on Sunday year round, but we're seasonal on Sunday for jiu-jitsu. So I only have to be there 3 or 4 months in a row, and then I get to take 2 or 3 months off. But on Sunday. But otherwise, I'm there 6 days a week.
Saturday like, classes, the morning and evening classes.
Yep. And so on like my quote-unquote off days, they're not really an off day. I have to go.
Yeah.
But my least busy day, I only have to be there for an hour and a half, like today.
Right.
Today's a Monday. Jason teaches Monday morning, right? So, and then I go in the afternoon teach the kids, and then he teaches the adults class afterwards. So I'm only there for an hour and a half, which that's not bad. It's kind of right in the meeting of the day, like the meat of the day, where it is a sacrifice still.
Right.
I have zero afternoons with my wife, you know. During the week.
Yeah.
You know, which is hard.
Sure, it's scrambled from 4:30 to 6:30.
Yeah, I get there about 4:45, and I leave about 6:45. So, you know, about 2 hours as I'm there. You know, classes are only an hour and a half. But pretty busy for me. And then on my busy days, I'm there for 7 hours a day, you know, or something like that. It's like five, every bit of six, because I got to do morning class, both kids' classes, and then both afternoon classes. So, I mean, it's a lot. But
so any woman listening right now has just agreed that your wife is a special
saint.
Person.
Dude, she's special. She's so special.
Yeah.
And I was doing this. This is what people don't understand about Carrot, is it's easy to look at the fruit on the tree, which don't get me wrong, there's not a lot of fruit, okay? But the fruit on the tree... and be like, yeah, like, you know, what she does is difficult, but it's not like, no, what she does is supernatural, I think, to support me in this, because I was doing this when I was a kid, and everybody that I love dearly, and they love me dearly, but a bunch of people, adults, that I look up to, were telling me, you need to quit on this, and you can do it, that's going to be a hobby, and you need to get a real job. And you need to get a career and an education, or you need to choose something.
Yeah.
Go to lineman school, you know, or go to college, or go to Coca-Cola, or to go to, you know, and
when you did some of that,
union
right?
plumbing.
Yeah.
I did a lot of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was hard for people you love so much to hear them say, like, you need to quit on this. And, you know, and I can't blame, I'm not mad at them.
Yeah,
you know?
That's not the traditional way to go.
No, you know, and it makes sense. I understand why they were saying it, you know. And there's a lot of people still telling a lot of people that out there, you know, right now, this very second, you know. But we live in a world where if you are – I am not good at a lot of things, but I am persistent. And I don't mean like a David Goggins persistent. I just mean like, you know, I'm not crazy.
Goggins is too much.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. I'm just stubborn.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of, if I don't do it today, I'll revisit it tomorrow type thing, you know? And so I was doing this schedule when I had a job, you know, and we were dating.
Yeah.
And then we bought a house, you know, and I was doing this schedule. I was leaving at 4 a.m. and going and training in the morning and not seeing her when she went off to work. I was already gone.
Yeah.
You know, and then I would leave there and either go to work. I had a nice college try at college, you know, for three semesters.
Me too.
and it just wasn't for me, you know, and I'm okay. I'm not too proud to admit that. I'm just not a good student. Yeah. But my wife supported me through the real job, Union Plumbing, and then also training the whole time and competing. Mm. And then she supported me through being a janitor at a primary school. And the reason I kept doing it is because the schedule was so cool. I could still go to wrestling practice after I got off work for working 10 or 12 hours, run straight to wrestling practice and coach at the high school, and then oftentimes leave there and go to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know? So just wouldn't see her, and I would do a 16, 17-hour day. And, like, I always tell people that, you know, it wasn't supposed to be me owning the gym, but the biggest difference in me and a lot of people that it could have been, should have been, whatever, was I treated it like a job before it was my job.
Yeah.
But the reason I could do that is because I was not competing against my, you know, significant other, where she's a girlfriend, fiance, wife, for if I could go or not.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. She was supportive of that. And I mean, that alone is impressive and rare for someone our age, especially. But she could tell, like, I was passionate about it.
Right.
You know? And she would say, like, I'm not going to be getting your way. Like, if that's something that's that you awesome. Feel like you need to do, like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
And I was blessed with her for that. And, dude, as good as a wife as she is, because she's an amazing wife, she blows me away at how good of a mom she is.
Oh, man.
Like, the amount of effort that someone can put in and thought and just tedious care, you know? Our baby was 2 months premature. 8 weeks premature. And 3 weeks before that, at 29 and like a half weeks into our pregnancy, she went into preterm labor. And it was scary, you know, first kid and everything. We don't know what we're doing.
Right.
And so she spends, it was kind of a blur. I think we did 8 days in the hospital.
Yeah, it's always a blur.
And 6 days at home or something like that. But that ad doesn't math up. We did 16 days, but we went, and they were like, okay, you're having contractions, you're trying to have the baby, your body is trying to have this baby, you do not need to have this baby this
early. Right.
Like, and you know, they beat around the bush, they're doctors, and they got to be kind of, they want to be discreet about things. And then finally, I just told them, was like, hey, listen, please give her a hard goal, like, of something that she can work towards, because if you keep being like, you don't need to have it now, you need to have it later type this
when
vague,
is later.
Yeah. Just give her something. She's the type of person that she will sit here and worry herself to death if you don't tell her
right.
something. And they said, you need to stay pregnant 2 weeks. Like, you need to stay pregnant for 2 weeks. And my wife had contractions every 5 minutes for 16 days and saved, or, you know, not saved my baby's life, but put her in a much better situation to live a life that
right.
is perfectly normal. She's a perfectly healthy baby.
Yeah,
you know?
She's awesome.
And not that she wouldn't have been 16 days before that, but they weren't giving her, you know, they sent the NICU person in or whatever it was, the premature baby person in to
right.
tell you all the terrible things that might happen.
Oh.
And I never even thought that that was an option. You know, you're sitting there and you're going to have your baby premature and then someone has to come and tell you the risks of this because it's going to happen. So they went and sent that person to, and that's terrifying, you know. But, you know, my wife is just a superhero. Because you hear people talk about how terrible contractions are and how hard labor is and everything.
I don't want any part of it.
Yeah, but she did it for 16 days,
you
know. I mean, like, no epidural, nothing. Like, she woke me up at 3 a.m. says, okay, we're having our baby.
Yeah, it's just
We got to go.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so she did and did great with that, and we got a perfectly healthy baby, and she's such a good mom now, too, you know, to her. I'm only me because of Kara, because I have Kara. Mm. I would not be able to be me for these people that I'm able to be me for, you know, if it wasn't for Kara. So I'm very, very lucky, and I could never brag on her enough, you know.
You know, we talked about the adjustments that we make. Mm-hmm. As men, you know, when we have a kid or when we get married and the things that we're working on.
Yeah.
But like, and then some of that just comes out of necessity, but there's nothing like the mom instinct that takes over.
Oh my gosh.
When
it's incredible.
Women have a baby, they just become a different person.
Yeah. And you know, people tell you this all the time, Trip, Darren explained it to me.
Yeah.
He's very good at explaining things. And, you know, this is kind of common knowledge now that I'm, you know, a dad and talk about dad things with people. Yeah. But to me, I didn't know it at the time. The moment the lady finds out she's pregnant, she's a mom that moment.
Yeah.
You know? And she's just pregnant. You know, she's 6 weeks pregnant. She finds out she's pregnant. She's a mom now. And dads aren't dads until they see their baby for the first time.
Right.
And I'm going to say that was like 90% true with me. I really felt like, you know, I was working for more than me, you know, at some point in our pregnancy. Maybe not the moment I found out, but yeah, when you can hold your baby for the first time, which was terrifying. We didn't get to see our baby for 4 hours, you know, didn't get to hold her. They just rushed her out of the room.
Wow.
Which was, I mean, didn't tell us how she was doing, you know, and all that. But, yeah, so when you get to hold your baby for the first time, or, you know, I don't think, to be honest with you, it's such a blur, and we were so sleep deprived from 16 days of labor that I can't even remember right now in this moment if I got to hold her first or just see her in the NICU. I think we got to hold her. It took a little while. It took her a little while to take her out of the little fish tank thing.
Yeah, a little bubble in.
Yeah, a little gerbil cage.
Yeah.
But when you get to see him, oh my gosh. Then you're a dad, but she's been a mom for, you know, in our case, 7 months or whatever. But yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible. So yeah, it's cool to see how much she's grown, you know. And, you know, we all have our faults. And Kara's like kind of anxious, you know. I think that's common for ladies, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Be a little anxious and a little, you know. On edge and
stuff. You don't be the mom that's doing it wrong.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But the way she deals with it now that she is a mom is so much more like effective and efficient and healthy. Yeah. Would be the three words I would use to describe how she deals with her anxiety and stuff now. Just she just grabs it now a little bit. You know, it doesn't take her over quite as hard. She's kind of got she puts up a fight now. You know what I mean? And controls and bottles is up for later when the baby's asleep and she can have her little meltdown. Right. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I'm really blessed. She's so tough. She's so tough. Yeah.
Oh, it was going to take that exact, you know, I say that when, you know, God makes us, he makes our wives with us in mind and vice versa.
I really feel like that because, like, we just compliment each other well. And
you do, man, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and like, I'm kind of cool-headed, you know? Like, when it gets hard, is it actually hard?
Right.
And, you know, I had a pretty good family, really, growing up and everything. But, you know, we had some hardship, too. Like, we weren't, you know, I won't get on to all of it. But, you know, it was hard, too, when I was a kid.
What is the thing you say about the plunger? What's the plunger deal?
Yeah, when you... the difference in me and most people is that when they see the toilet bowl water rising in the toilet bowl, they panic, and I just get the plunger and go to work.
There you go.
You know? And, like, that's kind of what I'm trying to describe. It's actually a good quote. Yeah, Gabriel loves that quote.
Who does?
Gabriel. Gabriel loves it when I say that. But, yeah, I'm pretty good at that, you know, and I compliment her well, you know. She's the type of person that compliments me well because if – you told me, hey, PJ, we need to record this podcast by the end of the week. It's going to be Friday at 11 p.m.
Right, yeah.
Like, and like, oh, crap, I got to get a hold of Danny.
Right.
You know what I mean? That is not her. She's like, I just don't understand how you can do that. When there's work to be done and time to do it, why are you not doing it? And that compliments me really well and gets me busy, you know? So much so it's like... when I realize, oh my gosh, it's 3 o'clock. Kara's about to be home. I need to clean up some. You know what I mean?
I gotta
clean up real quick before she gets home and sees that I haven't done enough today.
That's how it was in our house.
But that's healthy. That's good, you know? Yeah. And I get frustrated with her and she gets frustrated with me. I think that's healthy too, to be frustrated and be able to voice that, not be scared of one another.
Right.
Because I tell you right now, she ain't scared of me. You know, she's scared of me.
Black belt and jiu-jitsu your 120 pound wife ain't afraid of
me. I've only ever seen my wife in a couple. Tussles.
Okay. Don't tell on her now. This is
no
that's
oh my
sweet
God.
Little kid.
You don't want, you don't want to grab that. She's rough.
Oh,
I seen
man.
Her grab a handful of hair one time and like Undertaker choke slam somebody one time. I won't say who to embarrass them, but
let's not.
She
yeah.
did. It was beautiful. It was amazing. That's how I knew I was going to marry her. We were about 16, 17. I was like, oh my gosh.
What in the Armory, Georgia is going on?
It was amazing.
That's fantastic. But,
no, yeah, she's a great wife. And God, we've got a great kids. It's amazing. I mean, all kids are amazing. It's my passion. It's what I'm, I mean, you know, it sounds cliche or whatever, but I genuinely feel like I was crafted by God to work with kids. Like I'm a tool for a purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have, like, knowledge, which is all stuff I can fix, but I don't have, like, knowledge on, like, scripture or stuff like that. You know, I'm not super informed, but, I, like, my way of, like, ministering to people is just, like, presence, like,
yeah.
full-hearted, like, no distractions. I'm really good at tuning stuff out and giving a kid 100% of me.
Yeah.
You know? And, So I love working with kids, and I tell you firsthand, they're all special. I've worked with hundreds, thousands, if not thousands of them over the past, you know, 15 years or so. And, yeah, they're all special, but gosh, mine's just specialer.
You know,
it feels like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, everybody thinks their kids are special, but mine really are.
Yeah, know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I'm so lucky. She's so mischievous. You know, she's got this mischievous
little
smile.
She's just started walking, right?
Yeah, she's
it's
walking.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's crazy, you know? And it's just so funny to see how we hit that about 3 weeks ago where she went from like, you're trying to teach her things and she can kind of like replicate it to now she can copy you. Like,
right.
Like now. She'll tell people, shh, like be quiet. If you say, tell them to be quiet, she'll go, shh. You know, and that right there is the funnest trick to tell people at the gym.
Yeah. Because
she comes to work with me, you know? So at 9 a.m., I take my daughter to work with me with a bunch of tough guys, you know,
right, right,
at the gym, and she gets to grow up around them and hang out on the mat with us and stuff. And yeah, oh, I tell her to be scary, and she goes,
"I love her scary face. That's the best."
Yeah, yeah. Like things like that, you know, and learning to walk and copying you and doing what you do.
Yeah,
and, she'll see you cleaning up, so she starts cleaning up type stuff. Like I don't know, it's just really cool. It's a cool process being a dad and getting to watch them grow up.
Yeah,
you know.
But, the doing what you do thing, though, is scary.
What do you mean?
Well, like, they watch you, right?
Oh,
and when you road rage and at a red light, you know, or that word comes out, and then they say it, and you go, ugh.
Yeah, yeah, which is a, you know, she just hasn't done anything like that yet. She can kind of talk. She'll say things, you know. She tries to say a lot of words, and we know what she's trying to say at this point. But she can't really say a whole lot, you know, cleanly.
Right.
But so that hadn't happened to me a whole lot. But yeah, like, I can tell she's watching. She's a sponge, you know. And, you know, I remember, not when I was that young, but I remember when I was two or three, and you watch your parents have a fight or, you know, have fun or play a game or whatever it was, drive, you know, and you're, like, emulating that, you know what I mean? So, and I see it a lot at the gym, too, you know. I had a speech today at the gym. We have kids that are higher-ranking kids standing in the front, and everyone else stands in lines behind them. And so I need this front line to be like, you know.
It better be on, yeah.
Yes, because literally the whole room's looking at you.
Right.
So, like, I don't mean, like, you know, a little bit, kind of good. I mean, like, military type. Like, get your toes on the line, stand up straight, be quiet, tie your belt, look good doing it. And behave. So they want to replicate you. You know what I mean? So I get to see that a lot. But it's really cool when it's your own kid.
Yeah.
You know? I'm really lucky. I'm blessed. And that's, you know, when I kind of pivoted off the MMA thing, when I thought I was going to do that and be like a pro athlete and all this, and I started coaching, and I kind of was good at it, you know? And it's not even that I'm good at it. I just care. I just care more than other coaches.
Look, man, that's what puts you over the top, though.
Yeah.
You and then... It comes naturally to, like, Gabriel Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Jason's got to work at it.
He's good at it. He's good at it.
No, Jason's a great coach.
He's good at it when it's adults especially.
Well,
sometimes with the kids.
Right.
Even the little kids are fine. But, like, that tough age to work with, like 11.
Yeah.
Or maybe, like, 8 to, like, 14, you can see he's, like.
Well, he's going to beat me up if I don't finish this thought.
Because
it sounds terrible. Because I'm like, Jason needs to get better. when you open your mouth, when Gabriel opens his mouth, love comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I coach this guy love. And I guess it's Jason is the same way. Mm-hmm. But when he's like, man, you really suck at that.
Yeah.
You know, it's different than when you're like, come on, you can do it. It's just a different dynamic.
Yeah, well,
you know?
Also, Jason, we can get into this. Jason takes his grappling and really anything that Jason wants to be good at.
Yeah.
He takes it very serious.
Yeah.
Much more serious than me.
Yeah,
I can't take it that serious. I'm very persistent, and I'm going to show up every day. But don't expect me to not be goofy yeah. or to whine a little bit.
Yeah,
because I'm going to whine because I think it's funny.
It is a little bit. Yeah,
you know, and I'm going to do three times as much as the next guy, but I'm going to whine three times as much as well.
Yeah,
you know, I just think it's funny. He won't whine. He thinks it's he won't show weakness. You know, and that's like, you know, just a little bit who he is. And he takes it very serious, and he studies hard. So when as coaches, it's a lot like as parents, from what I've noticed, is we turn into the parents we kind of wanted a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
a lot of what, you know, who parented us is who we turn into a little bit. But also, you know, if there was one thing that your mom did do that you didn't like or didn't do that you wish you would have done, you end up doing it.
Right.
You know, same as coaches. He wanted a coach that was like direct and no fluff, and because that's how he learns most effectively.
You know, though, when you've got the technique right, because he just doesn't say anything at all.
Yeah.
You know, he's never going to be like, that's great. You know, that's just not his way.
No, he's got bigger things to do.
He'll tell you if you're stinking it up.
Because he's got to go to the next group and tell them how they messed it up,
right.
Which is it's good. And
you need it's great.
And I describe it as bad cop, good cop. Like, he's bad cop, I'm good cop.
Well, you guys balance each other out.
He describes it as mom and dad because he's rude. And he likes to call me mom, which is fine, you know.
That's the dynamic, though.
It is, though.
Yeah.
He has a very disciplinary style of love with his students. And I have a very nurturing type love with my students, and we compliment each other really well.
And
I think
sure.
that's why we're so successful in what we do, especially to people that are open to being coached. If you come in that place consistently and you are open to being coached, it's scary how fast you improve.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm very lucky to have him too. Because running that gym with him is a lot like a marriage in a way.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to compliment him, and he has to compliment me. And there's some things that we don't compliment each other on. And thank goodness we have other people around to help us with those things. Especially these days, because, we were struggling. We struggled for a long time of doing certain type stuff because we both stink at it.
You guys are not business people.
No,
you're fighters, grapplers.
To make $1 million, or whatever. And we would love that, you know, but that's not
why
we do it.
Somebody's got to do the taxes and, you know, pay the light bill, stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, and it's just not our strong suit.
Right.
And he's a lot like me in the sense that things he wants to be good at, he is phenomenal at.
Yeah.
And things he doesn't want to be good at, you probably never see him do it.
Yeah,
he'll never do it. You know, he'll just ignore it. And I'm that way too, a little bit. You know, So it is different. But we're very lucky to have him. I'm very lucky to have him because I'm a little bit easygoing. Mm-hmm. You know, on the mat, and even with myself, you know, I'm having fun. And I very rarely roll like super hard. Rolling being like the going live
or sparring.
Sparring, and it's good for him to be critical of me, and it doesn't hurt my feelings
him
to be critical of me, you know, and it's good. And, you know, we went to Ohio once, and I got beat two very good guys, I thought, two hard matches, and I was in the semis, and I was kind of getting the better of a guy that we all expected to beat me up, and not like I was killing him, just like I showed that I could compete with this level of athlete, and I think that surprised him. It kind of surprised me, and Jason too.
Yeah,
you know. And then I got overconfident and got beat. Mm-hmm. You know, because it surprised me to the point of like arrogance.
Right.
You know, which I am susceptible to.
Like, man, I'm doing pretty good right now. That's the last thing you want.
Yeah. Like, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
And Jason, as soon as I lost, it was kind of a tough loss.
I've heard this story before.
He went directly to me and told me.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, well, that was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, Yeah, it was, you know?
Yeah, but he loves you enough, though, to say it that way. Yeah. And it's made an impact on you, and you remember that moment, and you're never going to do that thing again.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And that's why he's saying it.
Right.
That's why he's saying it. And, you know, he also, quote unquote, tough guys, the generation of jiu-jitsu people that we come from, he's before me, but like all the way up until very recent generation of jiu-jitsu players, were like tough guys.
Right.
And we're not easy to coach. It's hard to convince us of anything.
Yeah.
It's like I could go and do the same thing against that same athlete and think I'm going to win as I walk out there again.
Right.
You know, so you kind of have to be, you know, harsh.
That direct
my sister
way.
Always told my dad when he was coaching her and everything, she was a great athlete. Quit talking to me in your dog voice is what she would say. But, you know, because how you talk to a dog when you're scolding it.
Yeah.
But he
yeah.
was just coaching hard.
It's just tone of voice for Phil,
yeah,
right?
Which is like, hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, that is so funny. Don't talk to me in your dog voice. Which is such a good – I mean, she was like 6 years old when she said that. But it was just the best way for her to describe that type of coaching.
Yeah.
And I need that. I need that. You know, I'm kind of hard-headed and stubborn and persistent would be a flattering word for it.
A lot of the time, as far as grappling goes, you're the best guy in the room.
Yeah, you know.
That's tough to be that guy all the time.
I'm a lot of the times the most experienced. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot of the time the best in shape as far as, like, longevity of the roles and all that. And I'm not arrogant enough to think that, like, there aren't people that train with us that aren't better at me at a dozen things, you know, because we have a lot of people that are better at me in a lot of things, you know. But yeah, a lot of times I am one of the more experienced or better, more successful.
Yeah.
We'll call it more successful.
It's your jobs, what you do every day, you know.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm there twice a day, most days of the week, and hours and hours and hours a week. And like my 1 week, I'm probably training more than 90% of our entire gym in a month. You know, you take their whole month, it's less than my 1 week, you know. So that's a lot to
do. Is it a conscious, like, effort that you have to make to not be like, well, I'm better than everybody in this room? Or is it you just laid back PJ?
I'm so bad. Yeah. I've never been good at anything. Like, just because I'd showed up.
Yeah.
There are people out there that can just show up to things and they're good and they know who they are and they can pretend like they're not that, but, you know, God gifted them with something that they have and the others don't, and it puts them ahead of other people, and they know how to utilize it and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have that. My greatest trait is that when you think you're good enough and you're going to kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit, I'm just going to keep plugging away at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing about that about me is I'm just, like you said when we opened the podcast, I'm just not scared to look stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I'll lose to people, you know? And that's like my superpower.
Yeah.
Is that I will go and lose to people that you think I shouldn't lose to, but I'll go and do it with dignity. And not that I like doing it, because I'm a terrible loser. I hate it.
Yeah.
But I will do it, and a lot of people won't. You know, when they think that they're too good for Naga, and they, which is a tournament, a local tournament. For the jiu-jitsu guys out there, they'll know. But it's just like a local rinky-dink type tournament, you know.
Yeah.
It's the Walmart of jiu-jitsu, okay? And
right,
when people think
they're
too good for the Walmart of jiu-jitsu and they want to shop at Target, you know, they quit losing to certain type of people. And now they're only losing to guys that are on this level in their mind. So they're up here, you know. But I'm not scared to go to Naga and get beat up. You know, that's why a lot of the times at my brackets, there aren't people in my weight. So I end up going up a weight class or two and just kind of losing a nail biter or getting hammered or whatever, or getting broke off, which has happened to me before, you know, and breaking something. I'm not too scared to do that, you know, call it whatever, like dumb. Maybe I'm dumb enough to do it again, but I enjoy it. I like that process. I like, you know, baptism under fire type, like get in there and just –
just find
suck
out.
At it until you don't.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not hard for me to say, because I don't think I'm the best in the room. And like, you take the top five guys out of our gym and you throw them away, I still don't think I'm the best in the room, you know? And then you take the next five guys, I'm probably still not the best in the room. You know what I mean? Like, there's people that can show me things and I'm humble enough. And, you know, I'm good and I'm experienced and I'm more successful than most people in our gym. at jiu-jitsu and in grappling.
Successful is probably the word I should use.
Most successful is the best way to say it. Just because you're most successful does not make you the best.
That's true, yeah.
It doesn't make you the most knowledgeable. It doesn't make you the most valuable, for sure. It's just you're more successful.
Yeah.
Like, that's, who cares?
Yeah, honestly. Well, we all benefit from that, though. Everybody that trains down there benefits from your success and experience, the same way we do from Jason.
Yeah, you're right. And we're very lucky to have what we have down there. It's a very healthy place for people. I feel like it's a place that, for anyone that doesn't have a place like that, I feel sorry for.
Man, it is like, it's, I don't want to call it a cult. It's not a cult. I hate using that word.
It's as close as you can be without being an unhealthy thing.
I feel like, that's a good way to say it. I wish that, not my church is fantastic, but I wish the church was more like what we have at jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Because, like, I could get my phone out right now and go into our Facebook group and be like, hey, there's like 8 dudes on Broad Street trying to fight me right now. And I feel like people from our gym would just come up and be like, all right, let's do it. Or I've got to move on Saturday.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to build a deck on the back of my house or whatever.
Yeah.
And people come out.
We're just blessed with that. Yeah. And, it comes from the leadership. Jason and I work really hard for that.
Yeah.
We work really hard for that. Yeah. And it's not an easy thing to maintain. It's a lot of energy. I'm always talking about the culture of our gym is the most important thing about the gym.
Mm-hmm.
It's not if for anybody who goes to their jiu-jitsu gym and only gets the jiu-jitsu out of it,
man,
that I feel so bad.
You've wasted your time.
To compare it back to the church, anybody who goes to church and only gets the script, like only gets the information out of their church, I feel bad for you.
Yeah.
You deserve a community.
Yeah.
You deserve somebody that's there for you when, you just need a hug.
You know more scripture than you think.
Do I?
Yeah. That's Hebrews 10:25 talks about going to church and gathering together and like how we're not supposed to forsake that. We're supposed to get together. That's funny. Our church started during COVID.
Yeah.
But when they were like, hey, you can't meet together. But it talks about being together and lifting each other up and strengthening each other and all these things. So you know more than you think.
Well, I didn't grow up in church.
Yeah.
My dad sort of tried to take us some. It was the one out there in Armurchie where the Marathon, the new gas station, is a Marathon in Armurchie over there near Bojangles.
Yeah.
They tore it down.
Northside.
Northside, that was what it was called. Yep, it was Northside.
It's out across the street from the
high school. I lived with my mom. So on my dad's weekends, he would take us to church sometimes. Yeah. He's a professional athlete, so he's out of town a lot of times.
Right.
So we'd be on the road, or I'd need to stay at his parents' house. Sometimes I'd go see them and stuff on his weekend. But, I remember him trying to take us there for years, Probably go once every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And I didn't get anything out of it, to be honest. So I didn't grow up in church. I didn't have, overly religious family members either, I got gifted my grandmother's Bible. I never met her.
Mm.
It was my dad's mom. She died of cancer, I think 5 years before I was born.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. No, 3 years.
No overlap at all.
Yeah, no overlap at all. Never met her. But I got her Bible, and that was cool, and it helped me read it. Having her notes, it helped me understand. And it's the Living Bible, so it's like, I don't read real good. You know what I mean? Like, I have a really hard time focusing on something.
Yeah.
That's
super easy to read, though.
Really easy to read, it might be time for me to, level up one, but...
we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'll take your advice on anything with that. But she has her notes, and highlighted, and circled, and wrote little notes. And she was going through cancer a lot of times with that. But that helped me kind of. And I've always been like a Christian, or what I thought was. I thought I was.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was. I didn't have any examples of that, like true, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did, like the way people around me treated people, they were treating people as if they were a Christian, but, they weren't like following it to a T by any means.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was always kind of, identified as one. I got a tattoo when I was 19. It has a cross in it. You know?
Well, it's your, like, Jesus and jiu-jitsu kind of crossover tattoo, right?
Yeah, it's submit only to God's will.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I was reading that Bible and stuff, mm-hmm. and I could tell that was real important, you know? And it's so funny to even talk about now, you know, how dumb you are when you're 19.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's the gist of it, honestly, like, to, you know, be Christ-like, love the people, love God, and, you know, that's what I got out of it as a 19-year-old, you know?
You know, if that's all you ever got out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know, and don't submit to these worldly things is what I was getting out of it. You know, there's so many things that are obstacles, and it's so easy to, you know, worship these idols and stuff. And
man.
And I was like, you know, pretty felt strongly about it. And it was a way for me to incorporate a word, submit, which is a very popular word in jiu-jitsu. It's what the whole sport
is. It's the goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a word that I felt strongly about.
Yeah.
And it was a way for me to, like, incorporate that, you know? Yeah, spent $100, got a tattoo when I was 19.
You paid $100 for that tattoo?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of expensive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's
a
small
lot for what you've got.
Yeah. I don't know what the deal was. He had to draw it. I don't know.
Tango, what are you paying for tattoos these days?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my last one was like...
What was your "Don't Die" tattoo?
That one's like $50.
Yeah, see, mine's
have you
like,
seen he's got "Don't Die" written like on your forearm right here?
Well, stay off one wheels.
Yeah, okay? Right.
Stay off one wheel. We might make that happen. Yeah, yeah.
So you're this thing, this church, and this Jesus thing is kind of circling back around for you though.
Yeah.
Recently, you're wearing a Grace City Church hat right now.
I didn't know we were recording this, but yeah so that worked out good. Yeah. So had a kid. Never been in a church. My wife grew up in a church. She wants to get back into church. And I'm supportive of that, you know. I knew, I always knew. It's like going to the gym, right? John, our pastor, described it yesterday as it's like a muscle.
Yeah.
You know, you got to work it out. And if you work it out every day, it's going to grow. And if you ignore it, it's going to atrophy.
Right.
And so I knew that, you know. And so she wanted to get in a church, you know, get our family in a church.
Mm.
And it just was perfect. We had talked about it a few times, and I just always had the hard time of jumping, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a guy named Wayne, and I haven't talked to Wayne since the summer of 2018. So Wayne trained jiu-jitsu with me for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we probably trained together 20 or 30 times in that 6 months. So not a lot, you know what I mean? And Wayne messaged me on Facebook one day in July and said, hey, can you send me your number? Here's my number. Give me a call is what he said. And I called him. And I was like, I haven't talked to Wayne in forever. And when I did talk to Wayne, I liked Wayne a lot, but I wasn't like crazy close to Wayne. We'd do a 5 a.m. class or open mat that Steve and I would run, and we'd walk across the Waffle House, and then Wayne and I would walk back and do the second class. So we got to hang out a good bit. And called him. He said, hey, I don't know why I just needed to call you, but I needed to call you. And I got the okay this week that I can invite someone to church. And I just thought maybe I needed to invite you. And I told Karen, I was like, well, we got to go.
Yeah.
You know, we got it. Like, that's just too perfect, right. You know? And yeah, so I went. I really enjoyed it. Small group. And I've had a lot of fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's helping me a lot. And like I said, I don't pray like I should, and I don't read the Bible like I should. And
most
I don't,
people don't.
And, you know, I don't do a lot of things like I should, but I'm persistent.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm chipping away at it. And, I've always, like I described it earlier, as like my way of ministering was mm-hmm. to be around my presence, to give someone 100% of me for a moment.
Yeah.
And it means a lot. So I've done that, you know, so that's not new to me.
Right.
You know, and, it's cool. It's really nice to have, a place to go. And man, it's just like working out or something where you feel better. You feel better if you'll just do it, you know? And sometimes it's hard to get up in the morning and go work out, you know? And sometimes you need to run errands. You have a busy day or whatever.
Yeah.
But dude, just go. Just
once a week, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's really cool. And it, and the name of the church is Grace City here in Rome. I'm having fun with it. It's a great group of guys. John, ministers to me a lot like Jason coaches jiu-jitsu to me.
Yeah.
Where it's no fluff. Yeah. He's not here to make me feel good about it.
Right.
Here's how it is. Here's where we mess up. Stew on that. And holler at me if you need me. And that's the idea. Tough.
Yeah, he gives you like this is the what for, and then you go home and you read the Bible and you pray and you figure out you know what that meant.
And I'm still working on all that.
Yeah,
and it's hard. It's hard for me. But everything's hard for me.
It's hard for me, and I'm the guy in the front of the room on Sundays.
It should be hard.
Yeah,
it should be hard. Yeah. Same way as everything should be hard. If you're doing something the right way, it should not be always sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah,
you know. And I'm glad that I have that mentality. My raising and my experience with jiu-jitsu and everything has given me that. It doesn't have to be easy and fluffy and nice. In fact, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually directly what it shouldn't be.
You're right. Yeah.
But it's cool to have a church that I can say that, like, you know, I'm a member of that church. That's cool. That's neat. Yeah. You know, I wish I could do more with them. I'm still working on trying to figure out a way to do more outside of Sunday at one, you know, because we're meeting at one right now. I'm having a really hard time. And we have, to be honest with you, I have a hard time going at one because the baby naps at one.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
1:30, that's our nap time.
It's so hard, you know.
But the time just changed, so now's your chance.
Yeah.
Like, it becomes easier. Yeah. You work things.
So, you know, we're working at it.
Yeah.
Kara is really good for me. Goes back to the... It didn't matter if you wanted to do the laundry or not, PJ. Like, why are we not doing the laundry? Like,
it's got to be done. Yeah.
It's like that again with her. So she compliments me with that. And then I'm kind of the, like, spark plug.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, gets excited about something. And let's, you know?
Yeah.
So that we compliment each other well on that, too. You know? I'm learning a lot. You don't know what you don't know. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to pretend to be an authority on anything. You know, when it comes to the church, like there's something like jiu-jitsu I'm an authority on. I can say that.
Right.
But turkey hunting, you know, I'm borderline an authority. I know I ain't been doing it long. I'm getting good at it.
You're pretty good. You're well practiced.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just obsess over it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend to be an authority on anything Christianity, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a decent student, and I'm working really hard at that, at being a good student in that. And, it's cool to know that I was doing a lot of the stuff right. I'm doing a lot of the big stuff wrong. It's easy to think that just having the faith is enough, you know? And it's easy to think the other side of that too a little bit, where it's like just doing the good works is enough.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Or just having the head knowledge.
Yeah, or just being able to regurgitate, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, that's... and actually, I can't quote it quote for quote. This goes to show that I'm not an authority on anything, because my favorite Bible verse, I can't even quote it perfect. But it's 2 Thessalonians 3:10, you know, and we told you when we were here before, for he who does not work will not eat.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
And so like that embodies everything PJ right there. It's I just got to work at it, you know. If I'm going to eat, if I'm going to, you know, get anything out of this, just going to be persistent and keep getting after it, you know? And
that's it, man. And I would say the same thing to you that I would say to any new believer, but especially in your case, because I know how you grab things and you obsess over them.
Yeah.
Until you just, you know, you wear yourself out with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to figure all this out tomorrow.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it took you 10 years to get 12 years to get your black belt.
Yeah.
In 12 years, it'll be a drop in the bucket, you know, as far as the things of God.
Every wrestler ever likes to think about the story of Jacob.
You know?
And I like to think about it like that.
I've been talking about that all day. This is the third time that's come
serious?
Up today. Yeah, all day long.
Every wrestler ever loves that story.
Yeah.
You know? It's like that. You know, I'm just going to keep struggling with it. And, you know, if it whips me, it whips me. But I'm going to keep struggling
You're
with
gonna
it.
Hang on, yeah.
Yeah, you know, until the end, you know?
Yeah.
But until he blesses me.
There you go.
With a busted hip.
With a busted hip, whatever it takes.
I'm going to walk with a limp the rest of my life. Yeah. But, so that's cool, you know. But church is fun. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning a lot. John's a really good pastor. He can tell he really cares. He's very passionate about it.
Yeah.
He, the person who thinks he's the funniest in the room is definitely him. You know, he's one of them. He is funny. He is funny. He's such a ham, but which I like too, because Jason's that way. I learned that way from people. My dad is that way when he was coaching me growing up. You know, so he just, and that's what I think that was one of the hardest things for me is like I always felt like I was different than the church. You know, like I'm different. I don't fit in.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably a pretty common thing.
It is. You know, yeah. So many people think that,
but. To meet John Lovell and he's in here doing it, it's like, okay, maybe I'm just using that as an excuse.
You are. Yeah.
Maybe I just need to, maybe I just need to shut up and go listen. But it is easy to, you know, listen to someone that's like you, you know, and understands you and your perspective.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to, I know I'm going to compare this a lot to jiu-jitsu, but
do it. Yeah.
For me, it's hard when I'm coaching a big guy for them to take my word for it because they're having a very different perspective than me.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times I you know, I could be off base a little bit sometimes. But when a black belt like Nat Bomar tells a big guy something, it's like, okay, yeah, like I believe you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's easy to receive. I'll say that. It's easy to receive. You don't have to be as good of a student to receive it from someone like you as you do to receive it from someone that's. And, you know, if we were all perfect jiu-jitsu students and perfect Christians, we could receive it from anybody.
It'd be easy, right?
You know what I mean? Yeah. But, you know, it ain't that way.
Right.
And so it's nice to have somebody that can talk tough guy to me when I'm messing up, you know? And it's cool. I'm very lucky to I'm lucky to have him, but I'm also very lucky to have you and have Trip and have these people that care about me. And I, you know, I've asked you questions over the past. I've only been going to church since July, or maybe the first week in August. But to have people that I can lean on and, and ask questions to, and you know, to translate this, and everybody's going to translate it a little different too, and you know, to have different translations in a way, you know, or just even insert different word, like not even complete big picture translate, just like different word change, you know, and the way it'll hit you, I don't know, like I said, I'm not an authority on it, but to have people like that, it is nice. It makes me feel good to know that I have resources.
Well, you know, it's funny on the other end of that. And I know some of the people that John has in his corner, but there are people that I will call and ask questions because I don't know.
Yeah.
The same way that you would text me as a brand new believer and be like, hey, what does it mean when, you know, this, you know, whatever Bible says about this or whatever?
Yeah,
I do the same thing.
Well, it's just important.
Yeah.
It's just important to do that. I don't care what it is. It could be anything, you know. I do that with jiu-jitsu all the time. I'm going to do it with everything I do all the time. And that's a, it's just a beautiful part of having communities. Yeah. And that goes back to what we were saying. You know, I'm lucky to be getting a lot more out of church than just church. You know, just there. I'm getting a community. I'm getting a community of people. And they talk about that a lot. And, you know, I'm really lucky to have that. I'm very, I'm very proud of what they're doing and to be a part of it. And, it's something that when you're not doing it, there doesn't feel like there's an urgency to do it. Mm-hmm. But when you get in it and you start doing it, it feels, you know, you can tell immediately this needs to be a priority.
Well, in that aspect, you know, the church is the same as jiu-jitsu. We'll just keep going with this. You miss a class when you're used to going two or three nights a week. You miss a class. And we're like, well, that was nice.
Yeah.
And then you miss another one.
Yeah, and it becomes more easy. You miss
another one, and then it's been 6 months, and you hadn't been in churches the same way.
Yeah, it's the same way, you know. All things worth doing are probably that way.
Yeah,
you know. But, yeah.
We're strangling each other. Like, right now, at 5 minutes until eight, Jason's about to be like, all right, let's roll, and then people are going to be hurting each other down there. It's easy to take a night off from that.
No kidding. I hope, for me, with jiu-jitsu, I get uncomfortable if I have to miss a whole day. Like, I get like...
I bet you do.
I sleep worse.
Yeah.
You know, my back hurts the next day worse. Not to say it doesn't hurt right now, but like, but I hope I can develop, I can work out this muscle that is faith to the point of it is uncomfortable not to go. Man. That's my goal, you know? And, you know, I'm a long way from it. But You know, that's the goal. If I can just make it to the point where, yeah, I have to go, or it's going to drive me crazy. That would be nice, you know. But I don't know. And we can talk about this. And this is going to be your turn to talk.
Roll it out.
I've never been baptized.
Okay.
Never been baptized. And like I said, I'm very new to this. And I want to say I understand being baptized.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not sure I fully understand what it is to be baptized. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say I don't understand it, but like that's the best way I know how to describe it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like to the max. And I know when you go to, you know, whoever, and you tell them you want to be baptized, there's definitely some protocol after that, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's probably where I would learn what I'm missing.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are pieces you kind of got to put together beforehand. Like you're sure in your faith, and you understand that Jesus is who He said He was, and the Son of God, and the sacrifice for our sin, and we call it the propitiation, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, which seems like the most basic tenets of Christianity.
Yeah,
like then you understand that, and you understand that you need that, mm-hmm. you need that Savior because we're just bad people, and you think about all the nice things you've ever done for people, and like, this are all the good things that I've done. And then you can look at the other side of this line here where all the rotten stuff you've ever done.
Right.
And to think about one of those rotten things in your life is enough to keep you out of heaven.
Right.
You're like, holy smokes, no matter all this good you did. So I need this Savior, this person to intervene on my behalf and be this sacrifice for me. And then you understand that that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point where you understand that you're a believer, right? And you're what we call a Christian. And then that's when you would be baptized.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so many people, like, they go to church three times and then would be baptized. Well, like, let's make sure that, you know.
Yeah. It's like that, you know. Yeah. I haven't really talked about going to church yet with very many people because of the whole people want to go to church three times and then be baptized.
Right.
You know, I just don't fully understand what you're committing to yet.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to fully understand and be committed, 100% committed. So I'm in no, I mean, this might, does this sound bad that I say that I'm not in no big hurry?
No.
Should I be in a big hurry? I mean, obviously, like.
I mean, there's some urgency, but I don't know that I'd use the word hurry.
Okay. Yeah, hurry is probably a,
Yeah, hurry becomes careless, right?
At some point, yeah. Okay.
Urgency, yeah.
Well, I got some, I need something to mill over then.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, and, you know, they did their first set of baptisms in mm-hmm. Gray City maybe a month ago. I don't know. I'm so bad with time. But, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
I think if I say something wrong, you're just going to tell me.
Yeah.
But it's so cool for them to do them, and this might be why they do this, in front of everybody. Because it is a very inspiring thing.
Yeah.
And it is beautiful, and you're glad you can share that moment with the people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's a public thing. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a public thing.
Okay, it's supposed to be witnessed.
Yeah, so when you get baptized, people are, you know, even back in, like, the biblical times, people were getting baptized. A bunch of folks were there, and they could say, I was there when he got baptized, and I saw it.
Yeah.
Right? These days, we got cameras and phones and all kinds of stuff. Everybody sees it. But that's the idea. You repent and then you're baptized. So repent means you turn away from all your sin and all that stuff. Doesn't mean you're never going to make a mistake again. It just means you work every day not to.
You're going
to
commit. It's a signing of the document.
Right.
It is a commitment.
Right. So then the command in Scripture over and over is to repent and be baptized. Okay. So being baptized is not what saves you. It's what shows everybody else that you've been saved.
Yeah.
So it's a public thing.
Okay.
And it is inspiring to watch. And every time you have a baptism service, there's like 25 people that are like, I need to get baptized. And like, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit.
And it means a lot. It means a lot. And to just do it because it feels nice is not what I want. And that's the only reason I bring it up.
Right.
Because it did feel nice.
Yeah.
You know, and they're doing them on Easter. But I'm no, I don't see myself doing it on Easter yet. Not at this moment, sitting here at this table. You know, but honestly, by the end of this conversation, Danny, we might go down there to the fountain. I don't know. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is I just
need the Coosa River still. I've got the Etowah and the Oostenaula. Oh, I baptized people in.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah, I don't know. I just, I'm figuring it out. Yeah. I'm working at it. Yeah. You know?
Don't rush it. Like, there's some urgency there.
Yeah.
But don't rush it. You don't want to get baptized and then be like, well, you know, I don't know if this was for me, because getting baptized, we'll come back to jiu-jitsu, getting baptized is the blue belt blues.
Okay.
For so
many
people.
That's when it gets hard.
Yeah.
This is when it's real.
The blue belt blues, for people that are not familiar with jiu-jitsu, is that you stick a blue belt on somebody and 90% quit.
Yeah.
They never come back again.
Yeah, yeah. Or they stay right there and do not progress any farther for years.
That's me right now, as it turns out.
Yeah, you know, that's okay. At least you know it. That was a really good analogy for me, at least as a jiu-jitsu coach. Right. I see that. Okay, well.
But I can't tell you how many people I've seen. Tango, you've seen them come up in front of the church. I want to be baptized. Okay, cool. Next Sunday, we dunk them. They join the church. Never see them again.
Really?
Yeah. That's the thing. It happens. Ask John. He'll tell you.
Okay.
So don't be that guy. Make sure that it's, you know, the real deal.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I want to, like, the same reason I didn't advertise I was going to church a whole lot. I don't know. That might sound terrible. I don't know. I just wanted to make sure that I'm walking the walk.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. In 20 years, and you've been a believer, and you've done all this stuff, and we're looking at this way into hindsight, and you're telling everybody you know about going to church.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because at that point, it's not about you. It's about you sharing this message. Yeah. Right now, it's about you.
Right.
And you getting this stuff figured out.
Right.
You're not in a place yet to share the gospel and all these things.
I'm just now learning what I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm learning anything yet.
Yeah.
I'm just now learning.
Remember the first time you came to jiu-jitsu, that guy choked you, like, and you were like, well, what just happened to me? I don't even understand what just happened. That's kind of where you're at right now.
I can't even make sense of it yet.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just, I'm, you know, learning to talk the language in a way. You know? And, yeah, and the other thing is, like, I want to be a good representative of this. I don't want to be thinking, you know, and maybe I'm doing that right now, or maybe I'm not on the podcast. I might sound just the same way as I felt like I sounded silly when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure when I watch this, I'm 29.
Yeah.
When I'm 39, I'll listen back on this and think I'm a goober, you know, which is great. I'm okay with that. I'm getting beat up right now.
Right.
It's great.
Yeah.
But, so... I don't know. I want to be a good representative of this. I want to be, like, how do you, in my opinion, how do you be Christ-like when you don't even know what that means yet?
Well, you can't.
I mean? Does that make sense?
You can't, yeah.
So I'm still learning what that means.
Yeah.
And I'm,
I don't know. I say you can't. You exemplify that, I think, more than you realize.
Yeah.
Just down the street in this room that we all go to and choke each other.
Well, that's like what I would always, before I was even attempting, that's what I would always describe what I was doing, and my very little religious efforts prior to going to church. People would be like, you know what, you know, okay, you're a Christian, so what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
So I just attempt to be as Christ-like as possible, and you know, I know Bible stories.
Yeah.
So I just mimic this, you know, the same way as that. Baby is going to mimic me.
Yeah.
You know,
it really is that simple, and people make it into this huge thing. If we know the Bible and then we just do what it tells us to do, like that's really all it is.
Yeah, and I, you know, we're in Acts right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing Acts. We've been in Acts the whole time. I'm not great at remembering which ones we're in.
Right, I'm not now. Either. I can't tell you. It was Matthew 21:13. Like, I'm not good at that.
But just from the beginning of Acts, when I've started going, it is so cool. To, you know, like I said, I'm not good at remembering. I'm not like Jason, who can remember the part of the jiu-jitsu instructional where he saw that certain technique.
Right, yeah.
And he'll go back to the minute it happened.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I'm not good at that. You know, the stories of, there was a situation, I think it was Peter, and he asked the guy, you know, what is Christ like? What is that to you? And the guy replied with, to love God, love people. You know, and that was like, it was in Acts somewhere, but the beginning, but anyways,
I should know. Yeah.
It's okay. But, like stuff like that. I'm learning stuff like that. And like I said, I can't recite it to you.
Yeah.
I'm not regurgitating anything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do my best to take real things and apply it in life, you know? And like yesterday, I learned that the word faith, like everybody says that, and I say it. I love the word faith. Yeah. I've used the word. I'll throw the word faith out there all the time.
You've told me that you had faith in me for one thing or another. So, yeah. I've heard you say a million times.
And you know, I'm not even sure that I should be saying that sometimes. I don't even know. Like,
No, it's okay.
Okay.
You're good.
Yeah. But so the word faith, you know, in, you know, God, like the way he described it, defined it, and, you know, maybe I might be misquoting him, so I'm not.
Just in the ballpark.
But, yeah, it's, you know, trust in an unseen God. Like, that's how simple it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't have to make it any, like, more complicated than
that's
that.
That's it, yeah.
You know, and it's like, wow, like, okay, I can remember that.
Yeah.
You know, that'll stick with me.
Faith is, as defined by Scripture, faith is the evidence. Man, I had this in my head just now. The evidence, it's the substance. Holy smokes. It's the evidence of, wow. Man, I was going to quote this verse. And believing in what we can't see.
Yeah.
The evidence of things hoped for, the substance of things not seen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You're going to have to write that down.
Yeah.
That was Scripture?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. See, I'm so bad at Scripture. I got to get better at this. I got to get...
Well, you saw how it worked out for me just now.
I'm going to get better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I'm just getting a lot out of it. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe I would feel like this if we started in whatever book. But
it's cool, though, because Acts, and you've seen this, is the beginning of what we know of as the church.
Yeah.
The church started in Acts, and it's cool that you're kind of starting your journey.
That might be why he chose that. I'm not sure.
Probably. Because he started this church in August. Yeah.
But yeah, so it is really cool. I love it, you know, and I don't know, just you hear Bible stories as a kid and a family that's, we're Christian, but or you know what I mean? Like, you're not doing the Acts. You're saying it.
Yeah.
You know? You know, the Bible story, you hear them, but they didn't mean anything to me. I didn't understand. They were stories.
Yeah.
The same way that Hercules was.
Any old book. Yeah.
Or Achilles. They were stories of famous people that we're passing down, you know, and there's morals to the stories.
Yeah.
But now, like, as I'm older and as it means something to me and I've learned to be a better student, it is cool to it mean something. You know what I mean? And it matter.
Yeah.
It's cool. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff, man. And it's a journey.
I like conversations like this, too.
Yeah.
Where I you know, I'm vulnerable. Like, I'm putting myself out there to sound stupid, but I like that. I feel like that's how I learn.
Yeah.
Is like touching the hot stove, you know?
That's the way that it's done, though, so many times. Like, because there are people who can sit and read and learn, and I'm not one of those people, and I don't think you are either. We've got to touch the hot stove, you know, do things the hard way a few times, and then figure out how it's done right. So that's okay too.
Yeah. Yep. I've heard you do it before, but it is very comparable to what I do on a daily basis. You know, I think anybody could probably take their job and compare it to church, you know? You know, and use their experience in other things or their experience in church to make them better at these other things or vice versa.
Leading people, though, so it's a lot more, it's easier to compare it to what I do on Sunday mornings. You know,
like
you stand in front of the room and you give the instruction. You set the tone for the room.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having a bad day, then everybody's having a bad day because it rubs off, and you know. And
I can't afford to be off on kids' class.
You got to be A game every day
because it's not. Yeah, it's not just my, you know,
right
experience.
Yeah, which you're phenomenal. Brag on you for a minute. I could do this, and every time we sit down and record an episode, you're a fantastic coach.
Yeah. I work really hard at it.
You do.
I work really hard. It means a lot to me. And, you know, I've learned a lot through the years about kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said it before 100 times, you know. People will treat kids' sports like they don't matter.
Yeah.
But they matter because it matters to the kid and they're doing all this work and you shouldn't tell them it doesn't matter. Just, you know, you shouldn't tell them that, you know. So it matters to me, and that's what makes me different than most coaches is most coaches are like, who cares? You know, they're going to get better. We've got the rest of our life to get better at jiu-jitsu. And I'll tell some people that sometimes, but you'll never hear me tell them it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That they lost in practice or that they didn't get a stripe today,
right?
Or that whatever. Insert. Yeah. It's always going to matter to me, and I think that's a big separator between me and most people that do what I do.
Yeah.
Which
but is you invest yourself in it so much though.
Yeah.
When a new kid comes to class, it doesn't take you six classes to remember his name.
Right. No, I work at it.
You work at
it. I'll ask him four or five times in one class.
Tonight, right now, what's your name? Tell me your name again. Yeah. Tommy. Okay, Tommy, Tommy, Tommy. You know, and you stick with it, and you got it. But it's that amount of effort that goes into it.
Yeah.
Because I think you see Tommy 30 years from now as a black belt, yep, and you guys are side by side.
Yeah.
And so that's the investment that you want to make.
You know, and I've messed it up a bunch. Like, yeah, my little brother is the best example. I was training like a madman. He was naturally talented, and at the time, just because a kid tells you they want something, it doesn't mean it's what they need.
Right.
And he wanted to stay at the gym, and he would. It's the difference in like motivation and discipline. In the moment, a kid will follow their motivation 100 times out of 100 times.
Yeah.
But they don't have the maturity to apply discipline yet and understand the long game.
Right.
Right? And so he would fall out of jiu-jitsu for a few months, but then come back for six and be motivated.
Right.
And want to be there for his class and then wait through the striking class. I can't remember. I think I would do my striking class and then do kids' class and then do adults' jiu-jitsu, and he would have to stay for all of it.
Right.
And he's 6, 7, 8 years old. And there were tales that I was burning him out, like he would quit for 2 months.
Right.
Right? And then come back motivated again.
Yeah.
And I just thought he was being a kid, but there were tales. It was me, him. It was, you know, the situation was telling me that I'm burning him out. So now he's 18 or 19. 18. I don't know. I'm bad at that.
Let's see. 10 years younger than you? 11?
10 or 11. So yeah, he's either 18 or 19.
18 or 19.
But I can't get him to come.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my fault. I can't blame him for that. I did that to him in a way, and for the most part.
Yeah.
He's a kid. You can't blame a 7-year-old kid for nothing.
Right.
Well,
you've talked about it before, though. Jiu-jitsu season never ends.
It never ends. It's the rest of your
life. So it's not like we play baseball from March until July, and then we don't do it again until March.
Right.
You know, that's not long enough to get burned out. Like, we'll come back and do it again next year.
Yep.
But you got to have a break.
Yeah, you got to. Or pace yourself.
Pace yourself,
at the very
yeah.
least, you know. And I didn't do that. So I've messed it up a bunch, right? I remember when I was a young coach, because I kind of started coaching at 16.
Because he
was six.
Yeah.
He was six. So I started coaching him. So I started helping with kids' class.
Yeah.
16, 17, 18. So as a young coach, I messed it up so much because I wanted to coach the best kids.
Yeah.
It's not those kids don't need you.
Right.
It's not the best kids that need you.
Yeah.
It's those other guys.
Yeah.
And I was blessed with a really good wrestling coach that I was coaching under. He was the head coach, Joey Harris, and he's an amazing man. And he coached Sean Murchie for a while. And, you know, he said, I don't want to be judged by the best kid on my team. I want to be judged by the worst.
Yeah.
And, like, I stole that from him immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized all those follies throughout the years that I was just ignoring these kids that really need me, you know? To take a kid from second place to first place, that's one position.
Yeah.
You know, he might have won it without you.
Right.
You know, maybe it was a bad call that put him in second place in the first place.
Right.
But to take a kid from winning no matches or two matches, you know, their first year of jiu-jitsu or wrestling or something, and elevate them to 50% of the time they're winning—
Yeah.
That's still not a great kid.
It's not.
But it's a huge leap.
It's way better, yeah.
You know, and it means more,
mm-hmm.
you know, to that kid, I promise. And, you know, I learned that the hard way a lot. So I've messed it up a whole bunch, and I took a lot of things for granted through the years. And, I mean, you know, this kind of hits home for both of us a little bit. But with Joseph, that was something that I learned hard, really hard from that experience, was like just how much just taking this for granted and pretending like, yeah, we're going to do it again Monday.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do it again Monday. No, you might not do it Monday.
You might not.
You might not do it Monday.
We don't
know. You might get a phone call Friday morning.
Yeah.
You know, and so you better take Thursday pretty freaking serious.
Yeah.
And I think that is another thing that I carried with me onto the mat tonight. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow I'm going to carry it onto the mat with me, and I'm going to carry it to me at church, you know, with me at church. And that is, like you're kind of talking about the urgency with the baptism thing, you know, that's the urgency.
Yeah.
And like I carry that with me, you know, and that is a, this will be the only time I cuss, but that is a shit way to learn that lesson. But I'm thankful that I didn't not take advantage of that lesson when I was taught it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, but yeah, I think that I am a good coach, and I don't say it a lot, but it's from those lessons and those hardships and stuff and doing it wrong a bunch.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky to have parents that still trust me after this. Because in my mind, you know, everybody wants to count all the great kids like Theodore Chestnut or Cameron Espy or Matthew Boyles or Jonathan Fogus or these great guys that I've got to coach through the years that I'm blessed with. But, you know, there's a lot of guys that I ran off, and maybe they didn't need, they needed me to do something different, and maybe I needed to bring a little bit different energy or something, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I remember one time I talked a kid into coaching wrestling, or into quitting wrestling, because
save him from
it just
himself.
Wasn't for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You know, sometimes that's a favor. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. He might be in this room right now.
Yeah. I thought so. Yeah. Yeah. No.
But that's, you know, part of being a coach is just being honest with your kids, loving them enough to say, hey, this is where you failed.
Yep.
Right. And this is what you need to work on.
And well, and building the trust with them. So when you say it, it resonates. That it's not you being mean.
Yeah.
It's you coaching them, because it's so easy to just be mean.
Yeah. You just yell at your kids and call them by their last name. And, you know,
it's so easy to be. You could say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a comedy thing today. It's like daylight savings time.
Mm-hmm.
If they said, hey, we're all just going to go to work an hour early, everyone would riot in the streets. If they said it like that, everyone has to, you have to wake your kid up an hour early. You have to go to work an hour early. You're going to lose an hour of sleep.
Yeah.
Everyone would knock businesses' windows out.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they say it different and everybody does it.
We just do it. We just,
you know what I mean?
Up.
So it's the delivery, you know, and that's big, you know, and that's a lot of like, the disagreements I have with people in my life. It's not what I said. It's the way I said it.
How you said it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, or maybe the time I said it or whatever. It's the circumstances, you know. Yeah.
Well, what you do, though, one of the things that stood out to me in my first two or three jiu-jitsu classes, I think Jason coached the first class that I ever did, and then you might have done the second. But you both did the same thing. You went through the warm-up with us.
Yeah.
The hard, like the worst part of class is the warm-up.
Yeah.
You run and you do the rolls.
And you don't have
to.
You could just walk. You could just make the purple belt run them.
Yeah. Or you could just, you could just shout out instructions and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But you guys do that stuff with us, and that's, you know, Jesus did the stuff with his guys.
Yeah.
He walked down the same roads, and he was cold and hungry and tired and all the same stuff that all of the disciples were, and he just did it with them.
Yep, just a leader of men, you know,
yeah.
And leader of tough guys too, you know. Like, I don't know, it's just so cool to learn about that stuff, because you just don't know it, you know, when you don't know it. But to learn about all that, and it just, I don't know, it's just so nice to get in there and to be trusted with leadership in that way by everyone, you know. But you have to earn it, because there's so many people that are trusted with leadership that aren't earning it constantly.
Yeah.
And it's not something that you get because of your belt rank. It's not something you get because of your age or your title, like coach.
It's or some, pastor.
Yeah, you know, you got to earn it. And I'm very lucky to have the group of guys I have because that we have.
Yeah.
Because they make me earn it, you know, and I love that. Man, it lights me on fire. This lights me on fire.
You know?
But, yeah, it's good. We've done some good things. I'm glad that people can recognize how hard I work at it. Because I work at it so hard.
Yeah.
The only thing I probably work at harder than that is the turkey hunting.
Turkey hunting? Yeah.
Probably.
Which is about that time. We got a few days left, right? And then it's
today's the opener is the last weekend in March.
Okay.
For private land.
I don't have any private land.
You got
private
land? Not enough. Yeah. I could cover miles and miles and miles and miles. Yeah. But youth opens up before that, but I don't know.
I'm not a youth, though. I don't.
Yeah, me neither. Doesn't help me a whole lot.
Not much.
But, so getting ready for that. Got to stay in shape. We talked about it today. Got a wrestling tournament coming up. I'm going to get murdered.
You got two wrestling tournaments in 2 days.
In 1 day.
Are they both the same day? Which day are they?
Saturday.
They're both on Saturday.
Yep. That's going to stink.
So April 27th, Tango, we were talking about this. I texted you last night.
Oh, me.
PJ's going to do Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling in the same day.
Yep. I competed in both of them once. I was an eighth grader. My coach didn't explain to me the rules.
Oh, okay.
He just said...
So you just got like 6 point thrown your very first match.
Yeah, Greco
match.
Was super boring. I think I got like borderline DQ'd. I lost because I kept grabbing the guy's legs. They said...
Oh, yeah.
They said, look, this tournament, this bracket, you're allowed to wrestle the way you normally wrestle. Just wrestle, get on top, and stay on top until the referee says stop.
Mm.
So that was freestyle, which I guess is... acceptable advice. I mean,
just like adequate.
And then this other rule set, they were like, this is only throws. So you can only throw the guy, you know? Also, P.S., I was 90 pounds. So not a lot of throwing going on for me.
No.
I was in eighth grade and 90 pounds.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So, but they didn't tell me you couldn't grab the legs.
Right.
You know, and I panicked and just grabbed the leg and... gave away a bunch of points. Instinct. I can't even really remember. I only had like 4 or 5 matches between the two of them.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not sure I won a single. I think I won
maybe
one.
Maybe how it goes this time around,
I think I won
too.
One. That might be how it goes.
We're in the middle. Yeah, you guys might have heard us mention this. I think we talked about it some when Rob West was on. PJ is in the middle of, we're making this documentary with Burnham Project. PJ's in the middle of a quest to compete in as many different grappling arts as possible over the course of the year. We've already done folk style wrestling, sumo wrestling.
Yeah.
We had
judo on the board, but I ended up getting busy and couldn't go.
Yeah. That was lame.
So I got to do Greco and freestyle wrestling in the same day. That's going to stink.
That's going to be fantastic.
It's probably the most competitive one I'll do outside of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Because jiu-jitsu, I'm going to have to do against black belts.
Yeah. But this is like, this is strong upper body, you know, muscle guy stuff.
And not me, bud.
Yeah.
I've got like 11 and a half inch arms. They might be generous. I don't know what my arms are. They're not very good.
We'll measure so bad, before we air the documentary.
NA. Just put NA for NA my
for
arm,
biceps.
Arm measurements. We just won't even find out. Let's just stay ignorant. But yeah, it's going to be not great. It's going to be college wrestlers probably, if I had to guess. Either that or very, very serious high school wrestlers.
Yeah.
Which may be worse.
That's worse.
Because they got the motor.
Yeah. You know, like you're gonna they get got that slammed by some 16-year-old kid.
Yeah. But you know, whatever. I've done the two. So far, the sumo wrestling and the folk style wrestling, I have exceeded expectations both times.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to do it again. That's the goal. I don't have to win the tournament, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm just going to exceed.
No, the goal is to compete in all these different sports. It's not to win.
Survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sprained my LCL the other day. That's a thing in your
knee.
Was
it definitely a sprain?
It's either best case scenario, it's a sprain. Worst case scenario, it's like a partial tear.
Okay. I didn't know if you knew something.
It's still intact.
Since last we talked. Yeah.
It still hurts. I can't do certain things.
Yeah.
I did jiu-jitsu class yesterday, and I kind of tested it out.
Yeah.
And
so it's March the 12th, and you've got a sprained LCL.
We're talking about compete on like late April.
Competing in April 27th.
And the worst part is, it's like deep into turkey season, so I'm gonna be. It's gonna be hard for me to train that much. I'm gonna do it. But I'm a turkey hunting fiend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I've got to go to Texas for.
You got to get the Rio Grande bird, right?
The Rio Grande, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be my third one towards the Grand Slam for turkey hunting. But yeah, so Greco and freestyle are probably the ones I'm going to get beat at the worst. The only one that could go as bad as that is jiu-jitsu. It's because black belts are really good.
I'm a black belt,
but also like when two black belts go out there.
So is the other guy.
Anything could happen. You know, like maybe I smoke him in 10, maybe we have a slobber knocker, or maybe I get smoked in 10.
Oh, man.
But... you know, we're going to make it happen. Hopefully, we get to do 10 grappling arts.
Hopefully.
You know?
I wasn't going to say a number in case we don't make it.
In case we don't make it?
Yeah.
Well, now I've put it out there.
Good enough. It's all good. We'll get there.
But, so I got to get in shape. I got to lose a few pounds, you know. Got to compete at, what did I say, 49?
I think you said 49, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to do 57. 57 is going to be big, guys.
57 is, that's big for you. You're like 53.
Like right now I'm kind of chunky. I'm walking around about 58.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have to cut, you know.
But you're not like in super shape. You're not training right now. Yeah.
Not at all.
So you could easily drop 6-7 pounds.
I can be at 149 by this Friday.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm going to try to gradually.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just quit drinking beer, which is going to be the hardest
part. That's tough, right?
Yeah. quit eating chocolate.
Okay.
It's usually the two things I do to make 149. If I quit drinking beer and quit eating, I say chocolate, but I mean like bread, like donuts, you know, crap like that.
Stuff from the rock store.
Yeah. But if I just quit it drinking beer and quit eating bread, I make 49 without adding anything extra. You know what I mean? I could probably make 39. The next weight class down is 39.
That's tough.
I don't want to. It's day before weigh-ins, though. So if I could get to 46, which I can easily do,
yeah,
I can do a water cut on Friday. But then this is what happens to me when I do those weight classes. No one comes, and they bump me up a weight class.
You get bumped anyway, yeah.
And it's like, this is stupid.
There aren't a ton of grown men out there at 139 pounds.
No, it's sad. I wish there was.
So and you get close to that 150
the ones
mark.
The are just avoid ass-kicking contests. Oh, I cussed twice.
Dang it.
Yeah. But, yeah, they just don't go to butt-kicking contests.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? Like, they do whatever they do. I don't know, knit or whatever. Normal 135-year-old man do. I mean, 135-pound men do. You know, just hide from big guys is usually what they do, I think.
Who can blame them, though?
You know, like piggyback ride on their wife's back. Yeah. You know, those small fellas like me. I don't know what they normally do. Somehow I ended up in this profession.
Oh, man. You're a little bit unhinged.
Yeah, it's stupid.
But we love you.
It's dumb. It's so dumb. I can't believe I keep going out there for everyone's entertainment.
I mean, it was your idea.
Yeah, you know, it ended up being my idea.
I told you it was your
idea. I thought it was your idea.
You texted me and you were like, hey, I had this idea.
I think you came to the gym one day and told me you wanted to start doing grappling documentaries. And then I text you that night because I was drinking.
I said we should do a thing like Daisy Fresh on Flow. You ever seen their series?
Yeah, where they just like
they just kind of hang out.
Okay, maybe that's what it was.
And then you took it to this whole different thing. And now
I always thought this would be cool. This was an idea.
Oh, it's fantastic.
This was an idea I've had for years.
Yeah.
Just take a guy, enter him in a whole bunch of stuff.
You're a guy.
Here I am doing
stuff. Let's do it. Let's do it.
The guy.
Apparently, yeah. This is gonna be fun.
Tango, I told him after this, like, I hope this progresses into him just trying random stuff, like riding bulls and driving. Absolutely. We know people in racing. You can drive a race car.
No, I don't see myself doing that. I don't see myself doing anything too extreme. My dad was always very adamant that I didn't rodeo.
Yeah. Dad's a rodeo cowboy.
Yeah, and he didn't want me to. He says he saw me get on the spur board, which is just it's 2x4s with plywood nailed to the side of it with a rigging on top of it.
Okay.
And you just practice your spurring.
Yeah.
And, you know, they practice their spurring. And I was like an 8-year-old kid. And he put me on there one time just to be funny. And he said I spurred the crap out of it, and he just snatched me off of it and never let me get back on it.
Too good at
it. We would go to those rodeos, and I would get on the bucking machines.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I would just do my very best, you know, and spend way too much money on them things, you know.
Yeah.
But when I was like.
Now you're in the safe and secure world of martial arts.
Well, he acts like he says what I do is more dangerous. But here's the difference. I'm fighting 150-pound things, and they stop when I ask them to.
Well, that's the even
when I yelp and say mercy, they let go.
Even in training, and I'm in there with you, and I'm 80 pounds bigger than you, and I'm choking. You just tap me. I'll let you. We can reason with each other.
The bull or the horse or whatever you're getting on.
There's no reasoning with that guy.
You strapped yourself to a 1,500-pound thing that wants you dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how I've... You know,
I've always
how is
said
what
that.
I'm doing more dangerous?
Yeah, you can't reason with the bull or with the bronc or whatever.
Yeah. No, yeah, but and I saw him hurt a bunch when I was a kid. I saw him hurt a whole lot, and the only reason he quit, he was in his 40s when he quit, which is a crazy
That's
long
insane.
Career.
Yeah,
yeah, you know, he did it all the way through. He started doing it, like, I think his senior year in high school.
Yeah,
did it all the way through college and all the way into his 40s, won the Southeastern Circuit twice. Like, he was really good.
Yeah.
You
don't stick around 20 years if you're not also good. You gotta be tough and good.
Yeah. And that's, you know, probably a lot of the reason that I'm good at jiu-jitsu is the same type of stuff, you know. But he, I saw him hurt a bunch and that stuff. I saw him hurt a lot, you know. And that's the only reason he quit is what I was saying is because he broke his arm so bad he couldn't, his wrist doesn't work anymore. Yeah. So he can't run his hand in a rigging. He considered going back left-handed. That's how, after 20 years of doing it right-handed, he considered trying to relearn it left-handed.
To relearn the entire game.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's bold. But he didn't do it, thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
It was his time to stop doing it.
You go back to something like that in that scenario, and like you're too tough for your own good at that point.
Yeah, it's like the MMA fighters that fight, like Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah, it's knocked just out like eight times
seven
in a row.
Times in a row.
Yeah.
Just stop it. Or Junior Dos Santos or whatever. Like these guys that are just... Like, I respect you so much for wanting to keep doing it and having the guts to go do it again. But, dude, just give it a rest.
I had this conversation, with Ken Shamrock one time.
Oh, wow.
I got to interview him. He was here in Rome for the Battle of Rome, whatever. Yeah. And they put me in this little broom closet, and it's me and the world's most dangerous man, right?
Wow.
That's what they called him. And he's in there eating Jefferson's wings. Huh. He's like, hey, you want some wings? I was like, yeah, I'll eat wings with Ken Shamrock.
That's pretty cool.
And so I was like, Ken, what are you doing, dude?
This just shows how old you are.
I know,
so
right?
Old.
He was like, Ken's like 48 at this point. You know, this has been 15 years ago now. I'm like, Ken, what are you doing? Like, what's what? And he's like, man, it's like my victory lap. And I'm like, Ken, dude, I've seen your fights. Like, there's nothing victory about this.
That's
tough.
That's tough.
That was a hard conversation for me to have because I thought he's just going to strangle me any second. Yeah.
I'm ready to be done. I'm ready to, you know, like the old Viking funeral. Y'all just put me on a boat.
Push you out.
Yeah, light me on fire. You know what I mean? Like, let me be done with it. One last hurrah is probably this thing we're doing. But I still love to compete.
Yeah.
And I understand why my dad would want to go back for that. I'm a competitor more than I am anything else with jiu-jitsu or grappling or anything, badminton, chess, any of it. More than any of that, I'm more of a competitor than I am a student of the game.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's really like the biggest difference in someone like Jason and me is that he loves being a student of the game.
Yeah.
He is infatuated with that.
Well, Jason's, I noticed my first ever class, Jason teaches this technique and he's like, if you grab here and you push there, it attacks this muscle group. And he named the muscle.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's the detail he's getting into.
He's the only jiu-jitsu coach I've ever heard use the word dorsiflex.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what? Why are
And then you're in the room and you're like, you got him here and you're holding this. And if you really want to be a jerk, you'll just stick your elbow in his eye socket. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. It's just different.
Not the dorsiflex, you know?
Yeah. It's like, oh, you mean like try to catch a cramp in my foot?
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. Okay. I get that. Dorsiflex, whatever, man.
Different style.
So I think that's the biggest thing with me is that, like, I do jiu-jitsu for the struggle.
Yeah.
I like it. You know, and I like getting better and I like coaching people and I like all this. I like learning.
Yeah.
I like improving at things and adding stuff, but dude, the struggle of it.
Well, you're what we, when I coached football and wrestling and a bunch of sports for a bunch of years, you're what we would refer to as a dog.
Yeah. Just,
like, we don't have to tell you to get ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I do, and, you know, I'm not very good at jiu-jitsu. Like, when I say not very good, everyone thinks I'm very good. At, like, for this pond, you know, I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But I'm not. When I say I'm not very good, I mean there are people on this earth that can dismantle me in moments.
In the grand scheme of things, you know,
you see what I'm saying?
Roka
that's
could
good.
Probably,
they're good.
Yeah,
they're good. I can't even drag it out for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, they can beat me however they want. If I go 100 times out of 100 times, they're going to beat me.
Yeah.
So,
you're the only person that's ever laughed while I was choking you.
Oh, like, no, I've never, I love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic,
I love it.
Right?
It's amazing. I love that people improve.
That doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, that's my role in the community is to make it where you can choke me. If Scott Frazier beats the crap out of me on Sunday afternoon at competition class, I'm doing my job so good.
Yeah.
I'm doing my job so good. And there are stupid, dumb, meathead jiu-jitsu coaches that will say things like, one of my students have never tapped me.
That's dumb.
Homie, that's the dumbest.
Yeah.
You know, do you understand what that says about you as a coach?
Yeah, where are your guys? What
you're
have you done
old,
for?
You're old, washed up, and ain't competed in 15 years, and you still don't have a student that can tap you?
Yeah.
And not to say that they have to beat the crap out of you every moment of every round, but they can't catch you slipping once.
Yeah.
Like, one, you're lying.
Right.
Two, if you weren't lying, you're a terrible coach.
Yeah.
You know? But
you incentivized it. When was the month that you did?
That was 2 Julys ago.
Was it 2 Julys ago now?
So that would be 2022, July 2022, from July 1st to the 1st of August. Anyone who tapped me out, I would give them a free shirt.
Yeah.
I got tapped out 3 times.
Was it just 3?
It was only 3.
I was thinking, I guess that's probably about right.
It was only 3. Trip Durden got me on the 4th of July.
America.
Yeah. He got me fair and square, too. He got me good.
Well, Trip's a giant, Steve, and he's pretty
Cox
good.
Wanted a free shirt so bad.
Do whatever it takes.
That he was willing to tear my limb from my body, and he got me. But if I was shaped like Steve, he wouldn't have tapped me.
Yeah.
If I was built like, you know, the Winter Soldier like Steve is,
right,
Steve's, I would have been
monster.
Fine. But he would have definitely tore my Kermit leg from my body. Right? Like, my legs are as strong as a Muppet's legs. Like, they, you know, the ones that don't do anything.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So it's like I got double atrophy in both legs. So he would have broke my ankle. And then my ankle was sore, and Mark Spates.
Mr. Straight Ankle himself.
Got me like 5 days later.
Yeah.
On the same ankle. And my ankle, I ain't gonna lie, my ankle is so sore. It was so sore. And so they got me. It snowballed. Steve snowballed and got me. So I got tapped 3 times. And congrats to those 3 for doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
you incentivized people beating you for a month.
And now, don't get me wrong. I wasn't trying to beat them up the whole round, but I was definitely trying not to lose.
Well, but you were getting, like, there was a T-shirt on the line.
Yeah.
So you're getting everybody's A game.
Well, and I would also take a picture with them while they held the T-shirt, like a jersey swap.
And then
post it in our group. Right. So there was clout associated with it, too. So for that month, they did try to dog me out.
Yeah, everybody's trying to kill you for a T-shirt for a whole month.
They tried to murder me.
Yeah.
And it was fun. You know, I'll probably never do it again. I'll probably never do it again. That was terrible.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was a good time. I'm always coming up with little things like this quest.
Yeah.
Or the month of kick PJ's butt or whatever, you know. I'm just always trying to come up with things that are hard to do.
Yeah.
I made the adults class for warm up do 20 push-ups, 20 sit-ups, 20 bodyweight squats, and 20 Nordics.
The Nordic, yeah.
Yeah, last time everybody hated the Nordic. They're like, I'm going to dislocate my kneecap.
I didn't mind them so much.
Yeah, really?
They were hard, but like it was.
But I just like coming up with hard stuff and doing – that's why we do jiu-jitsu.
I'll do that any day as opposed to that dynamic warm-up.
Which one's that?
The one where we run in the circles for
like 20 minutes.
Mean
like a traditional jiu-jitsu warm-up.
Roll. Oh, God.
That's got a place in time,
it
too.
It does. It does. My problem is I can't dedicate enough time to train consistently enough
to get to the point where that's easy.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like, very, very difficult every time you do
it. I have to recover from the warm-up. Like, I can kind of do the warm-up or I can roll at the end, but I can't really
do both.
It's
super hard to do both.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's something to consider. I think we do sometimes go a little too hard, but that's the identity of us.
Man,
that's the culture of us.
Yeah, it's supposed to. I noticed that the first time I ever trained at another gym.
Yeah, just how different
and
it was.
Yeah, it wasn't like it's gritty down the street here. And like, it's not only like accepted, it's appreciated.
Yes.
You know, like you hit a nasty sweep on somebody or you just sink a choke. And it's like, okay, you got me.
I'm always telling people, you are in the wrong place if you don't want your butt whipped.
Oh, man.
If you don't want your butt whipped, there are tennis courts 2.8 miles up the road at Etowah. Maybe you should try pickleball.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because in this place, we're kicking each other's butt.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't like that, I don't care what belt rank you are. I don't care how big you are. I don't care your gender. You're in the wrong place if you don't want your butt whipped.
Nah, you're getting handled in there.
But, yeah, we're very lucky.
But we'll tie that back into scripture and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
You think about something like, and you trained at Chip Coffee's place forever, and up on the wall in there had Proverbs 27:17. You remember what it is?
As iron sharpens iron, so does one person sharpen another.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I've got it in a bunch of pictures on my phone.
Yeah, a million pictures.
Yeah, from his gym
when
I trained
there. That's the case in jiu-jitsu or...
Yeah.
Church, our walk, you know, sometimes I got to tell you, hey, PJ, you cuss too much.
Yeah.
You know,
hey, that's
like,
fine.
It's, right.
And just,
and that's
I mean,
our iron sharpening.
You can't hurt my feelings with it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take it as a shot to my ego. And in fact, I will, but in a way of reform rather than
right.
you know, lashing back out. I'm pretty good about that.
Got to be willing to have your iron sharpened, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That sounds good. Yeah. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, man. It has been. I've enjoyed it. We'll do it again sometime.
I'm glad I made it through without looking too stupid, I think, maybe.
You did great.
Maybe 39-year-old PJ will watch this 10 years from now.
Yeah, we'll run it back. It'll be great.
Yeah. All
right. God bless you guys. We love you. See you next time. Then
cool.
So you're wearing a hat right now.
Yeah, I've got a hat on. I don't even know if you can see it. Can you see it?
Yeah, your hair's kind of grown out, but you can see what looks like a bite mark on the back of your head.
Yeah, I was. Let me think how old I was. I was eight. So that's like 04.
22 years ago.
Yeah, 02. So, anyways, I got bit by a dog, and it was a pretty profound experience, as most dog bites are for kids, especially. It's really hard for kids to trust animals as a whole after being bit, right? And we ate McDonald's on the picnic table. We have a concrete picnic table, old school, in the yard, and we left the trash, and we were playing in the water hose, and my dad says, "Hey, go clean that trash up, you know, like where we ate our lunch earlier. Go clean it up so we don't forget it."
Yeah.
And so I went out to clean it up, and my stepmom had a dog that hadn't been around us a whole lot. She was from Miami-ish and, you know, brought the dog up. But hadn't been around me a whole lot. And we would been roughhousing with this dog. This food trash has been out here forever. You know what I mean? We're riding the dog. It's like a 80-90 pound dog, you know, big dog. We're little kids, pulling on its tail, spraying it with the water hose, all this, right? And no problems. And I remember getting all the trash and putting it in the bags and then wadding the open part of the bag up and having like a little hammer, you know, with the trash, you know what I mean? Just like a sack.
Yeah.
And walking by the dog and touching the dog with the bag, just like touching him with it.
Not whacking him, just
touching him with it, and walked right by him, and it kind of like closed frame, open frame. I don't know if it's like my brain has blocked that part out to like save me of that, but I remember like being like chest down, and like looking, and my face is buried in the floor, in the ground, you right, and looking, and there's a dog leg right here, and then I remember like the pull, like of my neck. And something holding me down, but pulling my head up and like tugging on. And it had my head. It was a cur dog. It was a black mouth cur. It was a big dog, a really big one. I think it had like some kind of mastiff in it or something, looking back on it. But it bit my head and had me. And that's where I got these scars, 26 staples. And it was bad, you know. My dad got the dog off me and took me inside. And this is where we screwed up. Maybe somebody can learn something from this. Really bad wounds in my head. There was like dog slobber and pine straw. You know what I mean? Just crap. My dad cleans it out and doesn't want anything else to get in it before we go to the emergency room. So puts Neosporin in there to goop it up. You know? We get there to the emergency room and, you know, you sit around for 7.5 hours. And then you get back there and they're like, "Hey, what is all this in his head?" And then he's like, "Well, I disinfected it with peroxide," which hurt like the dickens.
Oh, man.
"And put Neosporin in it." And they're like, "Oh, no, we can't have that. We're gonna have to clean it out." And like, I have these gashes.
Yeah.
You know, like four huge gashes. And so they take a dish sponge and they scrub it out. And I remember that. I was 8 years old. I remember that vividly. It was the worst thing that's ever happened to me, I think. Yeah. My mom passes out. Watching it, my dad's about to pass out. You know, Mr. Tough Cowboy guy that gets his arms broke is about to pass out. And they end up putting 24, 26 staples in my head. And you wait a week. And the reason this come up.
We were talking about the Morris's.
Yeah.
Roxy pulled the staples out.
It was, I guess, to save us an emergency room visit. Because they said, come back in a week or 10 days.
You go to their house?
Yes. Yes, we went to their house. We
Roxy's pulled staples out of your head in her living room.
I sat on her kitchen counter, crisscross applesauce.
Yeah.
While she pulled staples out of my head with channel locks. and it hurt.
That's the most PJ Broom and Roxy Morris thing ever.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I am so blessed. My dog died this week. Actually, a week ago today.
R.I.P. Nasty.
Yeah, great dog. Yeah. I had him 12 years, going on 13, since he was 5.5 weeks old. You know, I picked him up early. And the fact that I was able to have that relationship with him was really special to me.
After all this,
because I remember for years after that, if a dog wanted to chase me or play with me, I would go into a full-blown panic attack. You know, but that was a good dog, man. Nasty was such a good dog, with my baby. I never even considered he would do something like that with my baby because he was just such a good-natured dog.
Man.
But anyways, yeah, there's your bonus little tidbit about PJ and his broken head. I've actually got a giant dent in my head. You just can't see it.
Yeah.
Lord help me if
I get bald. Your hair is long right now.
Yeah, it's kind of long. I need another haircut. Yeah. But, yeah, I got a big dent from one of the teeth where the meat didn't grow back right on my head. Ugh. So if you ever see me, you know, shaved head, you might notice a big dent. That's why I try to keep it long on top.
Yeah. Holy smokes. How tough is PJ Broom, ladies and gentlemen?
Stupid, tough, whatever. Yeah. One of those. Yep. Anyways, thanks.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
Yeah, man.